Hi, friends. It's Susan Blackwell from The Spark File, your one-stop shop for creativity where our doors are open. And if you smell something delicious, that's because Laura Camion and I have been cooking up something special, something designed to make a big difference in people's creative lives. Enter The Brave Creative, a free 5-day guided adventure to rediscover the vitality, energy, and possibility in your creative process. Whether you're a writer, a performer, a baker, a candlestick maker, navigating the creative process can be a bear. But never fear, there's power in numbers at The Spark File. So let's link arms and make the trip together. It's May 13th through 17th, 7 p.m. Eastern, less than 1 hour per day. And if you can't join live, don't worry about it. You can watch the replay. Join us by going to thesparkfile.com to register. And hey, if you're not familiar with The Spark File, first of all, welcome to the podcast. Secondly, we work with hundreds of creatives of all different kinds who are ready to take their next big step. We help folks fear less and create more in a community that is so fun and vibrant. And if you have joined us before, know that we are going deep with The Brave Creative. So buckle up, Buttercup. It is going to be an awesome adventure. Go to thesparkfile.com to register, but do it soon because it all starts May 13th. Thesparkfile.com. Register now.
The Spark File podcast may contain profanity and other adult content. Please use your discretion.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark file. If it's something that I want to make or how I want to be, I pump it in my spark file. I jump into my spark file. Let's jump into the spark
to The Spark File, your one-stop KTEL's greatest hits for creative inspiration.
I'm Laura Camion.
And I'm Susan Blackwell. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome. You may be asking yourself, what exactly is a Spark File? Where do I get one? What do I file in it? These are good questions, and we actually do have answers.
We do. A Spark File is a place where you consistently collect all your inspirations and fascinations. And if you're like us and you're making stuff all the time, or you want to be making stuff all the time, you know that sometimes the wellspring of inspiration can run a little dry. That is why we're here to refill it.
Yes, we're on the lookout for fresh ideas, images, and inspiration that spark our creativity and pique our curiosity, things that inspire us to get up off of our asses and make things like this very podcast.
Mm-hmm. Or a company that trains people to be themselves and be heard.
Or a musical written and performed in real time before a live audience.
Or an entire orchestra of sounds with just your mouth and a mic.
Or a chosen family of kind, crazy, talented collaborators.
On today's Makersode, we're going to talk with some folks who truly spark us.
And those folks are Anthony Two Touch Veneziale and Chris Shockwave Sullivan from Broadway's Freestyle Love Supreme. Gentlemen, welcome to
The Spark File.
Yeah, what Shock said.
Oh my God, the Spark File price of admission, real quick, before we even get started, both of you have to tell us a creative risk that you have taken recently. Maybe something that's progress, not perfection.
Something that scared you, made you a little nervous in your pants.
Hi, everybody.
Hi. That's the sound of Shockwave's voice.
That's me. I'm pardon me. I'm Shockwave, also Chris, so you can call me whatever you want.
And you son of a bitch.
Yeah, you know.
That sounds good.
You got to flip a coin, make a choice. And speaking of making a choice, during our show, which is completely improvised, I'll pull an example just from last night. We do one part of our show that we call seventh inning stretch. Most of the show is mostly words, and this is a chance for the audience to give their their cognitive brain a little bit of a rest while they enjoy more of the music. Mm-hmm. So we get a suggestion, and the beatboxer, in this case myself, has to start with sort of a mimed storytelling activity. And the suggestion for that part of the show last night was the word dessert. So, you know, you get the word, and then you're right up there in front of 800 people to make something up.
Damn
so
it.
Every time we do that or any part of the show, really, there's a creative risk involved.
Yeah.
So for me, dessert, it's like almost a Plinko effect of you dropping the little thing at the top and goes, yeah, and it, wherever it lands. But it's that, but in like a quarter of a second.
Yeah.
So for me, it was eating ice cream and watching TV. So I didn't know exactly that was going to happen until I reached out into a refrigerator and saw a little Ben and Jerry's ice cream cup.
There
in my
was
hand.
The ice cream,
and
you
I was
had
like,
to
"There it,
it
is! It's
to
ice cream."
To be clear, an imaginary refrigerator.
Oh yes.
Oh no,
imaginary.
It was there.
Just well, to
it
me,
was
it was there.
Yeah. It was there.
Yeah, because you're that good. Yeah.
So for me, it was that, and then what ensued afterwards, because the game and the song and the story does not end with picking up ice cream. So every step from there, it was, what do we do with the ice cream?
So for the people that are here for this live recording of the SparkFile podcast,
hi.
And for the people that are listening at home, they won't be able to see it, but they'll be able to hear it. Could you just, you don't have to recreate what you did last night, but could you recreate what you did last night?
Okay, so we'd start with Anthony saying the word is?
The word is dessert.
And then the crowd usually claps.
Yay! Pandering.
Nice.
Previously on. And then we move on. But you see, you know, there's the power to like create how big those doors are, or the cabinet, or the sound of inside a refrigerator, which makes a sound. So you have to sort of illustrate those things, because just moving your hand doesn't always tell that it's a refrigerator. It could be a closet.
It's always a risk. You're saying like the Plinko effect, and then boom, whatever you go with, you go with.
Yeah, it's a time constraint as well, because I can't take forever to write a first draft, a second draft, a third draft. It's just the draft.
That's right.
Happening in the moment.
I feel like you're earning your price of admission like once every 10 seconds in that show. You know what I mean? Where the rest of us might be like, oh, last week I wrote a little something. Mm. And you're like, I did that.
Yeah, it's more like once times. Every one-tenth of a second.
Yeah. Anthony, can you give us your price of admission?
So my family was visiting in town from San Francisco, where I normally live, and I've been away from them for 5 months doing the run of this show. And I have two daughters. One is 9 and the other is 6. The oldest is named Jet. The youngest is named OC. And my amazing, beautiful partner, Carisia, was also here, and they, you know, had a short amount of time together. And that time is unbelievably precious. So I try to plan out things while they were here to just get them familiar with the city, but then also to just have a great time. So I planned a scavenger hunt on the 27th of December. And I knew it was a risk because my daughters love staying inside. So one of their most favorite things to do is to chill out in their pajamas all day. We're a very active family.
Great.
Same. Yeah.
And more so, cerebral.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And when it's like time to take a vacation, like they just check out. They're amazing. They're really great at it. And I was like, ugh, I'm going to do the scavenger hunt. I'm going to take a little bit of a risk because I want my children to have a good time and also get a little exercise. So I drew up these little cards, and there were 6 different spots in the city that would get us basically from where we were staying around Hudson Yards all the way up to the, you know, American Museum of Natural History. And so I drew these little images, and there were little riddles on them. And the first place we were going to, we were getting out the door around noon. So I was like, it's probably best if we go and grab a little lunch. And so my youngest daughter is a huge pizza fan. And so I'd sort of gotten a place that was like, oh, this is going to be this. A lot of people say it's the best slice in New York. It's called New York Pizza Suprema. which is perfect because it's Freestyle Love Supreme. So that was the hint I gave them. And so they figured it out after like coordinating on maps, and they have to do these things that are called sister collaboration points and all this kind of stuff in the house. I know it's pretty dense. And we get to the pizza place. I'm like, yeah, my daughter's going to get a slice of pizza. She loves pizza. She hated the pizza. She was like, this is not my style.
Tough crowd.
And it was like this fun adventure thing. And here I had in my mind's eye, it was going to be awesome.
So much work has gone into this.
It's like stop number one.
I don't like this pizza.
Yeah. And I was like,
kids are the best.
Aren't they? Yeah. Here's the great thing about parenting. Just when you think you're doing a good job, you're the worst. And that is kind of, it typifies that sort of like price of admission thing, right?
Yeah.
Which is like, you want your kids to have a great experience. You do your best to like get them into a place to have an enjoyable moment. And you can't control that. It is not yours to control. And so I was okay with them not having a good slice. I was like, okay, hey, that's fine. I'll eat the rest of your pizza. And then, you know, we went around.
Everybody
the rest
wins.
Of the city.
Yes.
Everybody wins. The expectations around it. Yes, I was hoping that they would enjoy it, but that they didn't. Yeah, I had to let that go. Like, and that to me is almost always like that parenting sort of insight that I get each time I'm with my kids.
I think it's true of kids and it's true of audiences. So you cannot control. You can put what drives you, what you're passionate about on stage, and then you let go.
Yeah, it's funny you say audience. I've realized during the course of this run and experience of being on stage, when you meet the audience for the very first time, it's almost like you're meeting a person for the very first time.
Yeah.
And some people are really loud, and some people are close talkers, and some people are very quiet, introvert. It's all, there's millions and millions of different types of people, just as there are audiences. And you have to react
so
as
true.
Such.
Yeah. And so not punish them if they're not what the expectation you were holding in your mind.
Yeah, which slips kind of slightly into another risk that happens every night in our show, which is that we're trying to train an audience and filter them to be the best version of themselves, much like I imagine the workshops that you're leading.
nice and plug. That's really great.
And so there's this moment in the show where we kind of turn out to the audience for the first time and we say, hey, welcome audience. And for a long time, we used to say, ladies and gentlemen. And I think that, you know, gender is not binary.
That's
so the fluidity of gender is, it's really important for us to frame that as a concept.
Please
for the audience.
Tell me you say, hey, babies and skeletons.
Instead, we say babies. No, we say brave audience. Because we're training them, and we're also saying that this is something kind of exceptional that you're doing here. You're putting yourself out there by deciding to interact with our show in a certain way. And so that's a small moment where we take a little risk, and then it kind of gets compounded again later when I will ask someone's preferred pronouns when they come up on stage with us.
Mm.
So someone will come up on stage with an audience volunteer and I'll say, before we start, tell me your preferred pronouns. And often we'll have people who are like, what's that? Totally cool. That's fine.
Also part of the training process.
Process. And then I will always end it with he, him, in case it comes up. You know, that's how I identify. And it's important to give people the opportunity to identify differently. Now, we've definitely had people coming up there and be like, oh, what's the big deal? Right. And it's like, it doesn't matter to them. Great white dudes. But then there's like a bunch of people in the audience who are also just like, oh, this is a moment where I haven't heard that in theater yet, or I haven't. And so it's this small little like micro risk of alienating maybe some of the dominant parts of our culture, but really important for like retraining some of the neural networks around what we think fluidity and gender is.
I feel like you have so beautifully fully paid the price of admission.
My God,
and just to second Cam's emotion, I feel like you have structured your lives and your creative work. So you're living in a space where you are by the millisecond setting yourself up to risk,
constantly.
To risk.
And even in the phrasing of your brave audience, you are celebrating the bravery. And I think sometimes we're prone to celebrate the outcome of something and the accolades as opposed to the brave action that we're all taking, whether by going to the theater or being on the stage.
Yeah. Have you read Brave Not Perfect yet?
No.
Oh, wow. It's wonderful. So an amazing CEO started Girls Who Code, Reshma Shunjapta. She wrote this great book last year called Brave, Not Perfect. And it's really sort of a wonderful playbook for young girls and young boys and those who identify other to sort of stop trying to be the outcome and be in the process.
Put that in your spark file and smoke it.
We are
Brave,
on
Not
that.
Perfect. That's great. You are fully admitted to the spark file. Woo! You have paid your price of admission.
That's right.
For people who don't know you, how do each of you identify creatively?
That's a great question. You know, I'm beatboxing on stage, and there's a gigantic, now growing culture of beatboxers. It started in New York, and it's grown. It's kind of leaped the pond, and it's really big in Europe. And like there's all this culture wars within that. Not because of that, but alongside that, I don't necessarily identify myself as a beatboxer. It's more like a performer or artist, or I love the word maker that you both use. So for me, I'm also a percussionist. I will say vocal percussionist to perhaps somebody who might not know what beatboxing is, to just, you know, bring it closer to home. So musician, performer, artist, maker are usually the words I'll use.
Excellent. If you use beatboxer, just out of curiosity, or vocal percussionist, are you aware that like then their next question is going to be like,
yeah, they'll be like, I'm not a monkey, you can't pull my string, you know.
Get ready because I'm about to pull your string,
well,
monkey.
It's different, you know. Here we're in context, so that's
and
it's
you got
a
consent,
different.
Susan, to pull the string.
You have my consent to pull my string.
Pull the string.
What about you, Anthony? How do you identify creatively?
It's a really good question.
I feel like these are big questions just because you are multi-passionate people, do a lot of things.
I also try to always hear the question that I want to answer instead of the question that was asked.
That is
so
good.
I don't necessarily hear
media training.
How do you identify yourself? I hear, what are you working on now that you're passionate about? And so I generally will answer that question with, oh gosh, well this morning I made breakfast for my daughters and one of them loved it.
Scavenger hunt. Did not go great.
Yeah, exactly. And the other one wanted to punch me in the face. And then I dropped them off at school. And then I went in and I have this company and we try to help people find their authentic voice using improv skills. But more importantly, I try to be present in the moment in which I find myself in.
Fair enough.
Are you ever like, and we're mighty, mighty Broadway stars in a musical called Freestyle Love Supreme?
That's still not real. And Anthony and I were talking about this right before the podcast, that it's not real to us as individuals and to the spirit of the group. Like, we didn't begin 16 years ago and say, we're going to make it to Broadway someday.
Yeah. Right.
You know,
who was audacious enough as an improviser to think that they would be on Broadway?
Yeah.
This is not a path that improv travels.
How has it been for you then? Like first realizing like, okay, whether or not this was your intent, here you are.
Well, one thing I can say is that being at the Booth Theater is the best well-oiled machine that we've ever performed.
What a jewel
in
box.
And with.
Yeah.
The theater is amazing. The staff is embracing and wonderful. And the group, whether it's the original core cast or newer members or new members who are actually old members are on stage, we've arranged the show as such that the lineup is always different. The arrangement of characters on stage is always different. There's always a special guest. So you never know what you're going to get. And that's the basics of our group. So all of the comforts are there. It just happens to be on Broadway.
I remember when I was teaching somewhere, I was teaching at a college and we were doing sort of a Q&A at some point. And this lovely student stood up and said, now that you've made it to Broadway, like what's left for you? And I was like,
you're done.
You're great. I love you. But I was like, the goal was never to go to Broadway. The goal was to make work that I loved with people that I loved.
Word.
And like the goal of heading east, there's always more east you can go. There's always more work you love you can make with people that you love. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like Broadway was never the goal. It was to make work that I loved with people I loved.
Yeah, and it's a strange thing, but Broadway is for most people a very aspirational place to get.
Mm-hmm.
And they see it as a landing spot,
yeah,
right? It is like, if when I get to Broadway, and then you get to Broadway and you're like, when I get to Super Broadway.
There's no such thing.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah. So it's that trick that our brains like to play on ourselves.
The acquisitional mind. When I get to this, I'll be happy.
Right. And the problem solving part of our brain, which is like, well, if I get to X, then it means I will have achieved Y.
When actually, when you get to Broadway, it means you got to Broadway.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you're happy. It doesn't mean you're wealthy. It just means you got to Broadway, which is an accomplishment. Right. I'm
totally,
super proud of you.
I mean,
but I was proud of you before too.
That's right. And we'll
not
be,
that it matters what I think.
With that said, we'd be remiss to say that it's not an unbelievably fortunate experience.
Amazing.
Like we are the luckiest.
Yes. Yeah.
We are kind of rewriting the rules of improv as we go as well, which is that this can be seen a bit as a commercial entity now.
Yeah, right. That's blazing trails.
Investing in improv to go to Broadway might be something that happens more in the future now because of this.
Mm-hmm.
That is, wow, that feels
that's
unreal.
A game changer
it's
for
huge.
A lot of people.
Yeah, that's some legacy shit. That's good.
When we had your friend Lin-Manuel, he was telling us some, I don't know, he's telling about the effect of the show on his nervous system and let's say the crowded line around the bathroom before the show.
it's a line of two. It's him and Utkarsh.
He did name names.
Tell us more.
It was not a blind item.
Tell us
what
this is like backstage for you guys. Just prepping for the show because you're like change on top of change.
Yeah.
You
how
just
do
described,
you prepare your mind for this?
Not only is it improv in the moment, but you're sounds like you're changing who you're doing it with, like who's the lineup,
every
what order,
show.
Everything is changing except your location.
Yeah. It depends who you ask in the group and it depends anybody out there, how they prepare for being on stage and prepare for what your nerves do and how your brain works. And for me, personally, getting ready with the group, which we can explain the process of it.
Mm-hmm.
It for me, it's about the group more than about for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of the mindset. Okay, who's in the show? This is the order. Great, and I could just get on stage with very minimal, just a little, you know, get the lips a little bit warm, and then boom. That's what it is. We have generally a 15-minute process of everybody comes down to the green room. We get into a circle. We do some kind of warmer warm up where we do, whether it's a sound bomb or everybody closes their eyes and we try to count as high as we can go without stepping on each other's toes. Just something to kind of bring the vibe of the room together. And then we'll drop a beat and kick some words around. And the words are from previous shows and we have some fun.
Can I ask you about your personal process then? Do you feel fear? Do you feel like I'm going to shit my pants and or have you learned to manage that in some way? And if so, can you tell us the secret?
Oh, wow. You know, there's a lot of pages to that book, I think.
Please write it. I mean, genuinely, please write it.
It's my pen. Yeah.
Sound like a pencil.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was one of those like.
Judgy bitch. Yeah.
No, well, he was right. It's like if it's an automatic pencil, it's kind of a
pen. Absolutely a pencil.
You know, the larger audience there is, I've found for myself and I've witnessed it in others, the larger the audience, the easier it is because it's you're just looking out on an ocean.
Yeah.
If it's a smaller room and maybe you know the people in the room, that affects the change. You know, I don't know many or if anybody in this room right now, it's easier to do, but it's a smaller room. But if like my mom was there, then I'd be conscious that my mom is here and I'd want to mention her somehow in this answer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've
which
noticed,
you just did, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, right. Hey mom, now I have to send it to her. Great.
Oh, great. Yeah.
I've witnessed a lot of stand-up comedians who stutter in regular life, with kind of one-on-one interactions. And when they perform in front of a sea of people, the stuttering goes away.
Wow.
There's something amazing in that. And probably in some of our brain study friends, we could find out a little bit more about how that works. But there's something about nerves and something about preparation that happens with the size of audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then my personal set of nerves, it's kind of like doing this group for so long. I know that I'm not going to get dropped. I know that I'm not going to mess up. My role is to sort of be strong and be the wave for them to ride on as the beat. So it's not really an option to be jittery before a show. So that kind of just goes away.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by this question. And this is something that at Speechless and even at Freestyle Ups Room Academy, we really explore and investigate and are doing research around. Mm. And I'm hugely interested and invested in seeing what parts of the brain are operating and why, and how we can potentially start creating neural networks that subvert our fight or flight instinct.
Yeah.
Baby, let's make out. Yes. I'm so into this. I am so into this.
Yeah. So quite often when you feel that nervous system reaction, like mm-hmm. that Lynn was talking about and that Utkarsh are talking about, it's a fight or flight instinct. It's based in the amygdala. So fear generally comes from this deep, deep core part of our brain. And it sets off a series of events. And those series of events often lead to the evacuation of your bowels, the myopathy of your view, yeah. the loss of smell, the taste going away. It usually is in order of most importance to survive. Mm-hmm. So usually the last thing you lose is like sensation of touch and feel, because you're like, I need to keep running away from this lion.
I'm going to need these limbs.
I need these limbs. And they're often associated from what we've been finding out, and also from some amazing research and studies that are out there, that these are things that are baked into our brains. These are reptilian parts of our brains that have been so sort of inherent in the structure of the way our brain works, that you really have to work very, very hard at creating a process that once you get it in place, it subverts those initial stages of fight or flight.
Mm-hmm. And we've been strategizing about this for the last day and a half, and talking about some of the tools that we can have in our toolkit, so that when you're taking a creative risk and when you start to feel a visceral response in your body, you have a way to make a different neural choice. Do you have any thoughts you'd like to share with us to add to our toolkit?
I'll start with a story, which is I was asked to do a podcast by some dear friends. And when you think of a podcast, you're like, oh yeah, we're going to be in a small little room. It'll just be us. And then I arrived at said place and there was an audience.
That's weird. That's crazy.
That story is about today. We had no idea that all of you would be here right now. And so there's a moment when I walked in and I saw chairs. I was like, oh, this is, there won't be anybody sitting in it. We're just here for the recording. And then bodies started coming in. And yes, I started getting a bit of a fight or flight. It generally starts in shallow breathing, and it's your vagus nerve. So this is a part of your brain that's connected to your pulmonary system that says you need to start oxygenating your blood in a different way to be ready to get the hell out of here. So one way that I start subverting that is to do a very specific inhale of 4 and exhale of 6 or 8, so that my exhale is longer than my inhale, which then resets the vagus nerve. And it says, don't worry, heart, everything's going to be fine. So that's step one generally for me, is doing those inhales and exhales. And then I start doing some of the routine that I've associated now for so long with performing improv, which mm-hmm. is trying to avail myself to the moment and be present. And I don't know, maybe some of you even saw me doing it when I sat down here. I turned a shockwave and I did something called lion mouse, which helps to stretch out your face and get a little bit more blood flow to your face. But more importantly for me, I've created really strong synaptic connections that are a bunch of preferred pathways that start leading me to the part of my brain that says, I'm about to perform. You got this. It's going to be just fine. So I start triggering more healthy pathways in my brain that have existed now for years because of this process I've created.
Amazing. First of all, I just want to apologize for being an asshole and not putting "it's a live podcast."
Just one word can make one all the
word.
Difference.
Or go back and reread your email. You're the asshole. I don't know.
No, you did say live. Wrote live podcast in the. So we've done a bunch of podcasting before. That generally just means we're in the same room together,
or it's streaming,
live. So a live with an audience might be the rejoiner that goes with live.
I'm gonna get a time machine and I'm gonna read. Think all of that.
No, this is
but
great.
In the meantime,
I mean, this has been okay, right? We're not haven't been
terrible.
We're doing good. They're like boo.
Tacit.
I love this. I just love those exercises, and I think I want to say for our workshop participants, you know, whether or not you're a performer, it sounds like you can create those exercises that will rework those pathways, that calm you down, whether it's like, it's time for me to write, or it's time for me to sing a song, sit down at the keyboard, whatever, you know, it is, your craft is, you can.
And Laura, I posit that like, we're all performers.
No.
You know, like
posit that.
It's just kind of what you call it.
Yeah.
But there's almost always a moment in
a
every day.
It's go time.
Yeah. That it's that something needs to kind of change, or an attenuation needs to be recalibrated.
I love that.
And I imagine this probably goes to things beyond performing as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to sit down and read a book and you have trouble reading without falling asleep, maybe if there's patterns that you do beforehand that tells your brain that you're about to go into
this
process.
Yeah. The thing I also want to underscore is that these are two very seasoned performers, live performers, and
streaming even.
And streaming. And you...
And with an audience.
Started to see people flow in, and it gave you a feeling in your body. Mm-hmm. So I just want to underscore that. Like the good news and the bad news is, unless you have a very specific kind of nervous system, it's going to be with you throughout the course of your life.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark fire. Could be something that I wanna make or how I wanna be. I pump it in my spark file. I jump into my spark file. Let's open up the spark file.
That was part one of our interview with Freestyle Love Supreme. Part two will be available next week. Unless you're in the future, then it's available now. So go on, give it a listen, and find out what's sparking Freestyle Love Supreme these days. Hey, we want to thank our live hype man, Jack D'Amelio, and everyone at Mark Fisher Fitness. Mark Fisher, Michael Keeler, Andrew Cole, the amazing Denise Stumper. And special thanks to the attendees of the Spark File New Year 2020 Creativity Workshop and Live Podcast. You are truly a bonfire of sparks.
Hi, friends. It's Susan Blackwell from The Spark File, your one-stop shop for creativity where our doors are open. And if you smell something delicious, that's because Laura Camion and I have been cooking up something special, something designed to make a big difference in people's creative lives. Enter The Brave Creative, a free 5-day guided adventure to rediscover the vitality, energy, and possibility in your creative process. Whether you're a writer, a performer, a baker, a candlestick maker, navigating the creative process can be a bear. But never fear, there's power in numbers at the Spark File. So let's link arms and make the trip together. It's May 13th through 17th, 7 p.m. Eastern, less than 1 hour per day. And if you can't join live, don't worry about it. You can watch the replay. Join us by going to thesparkfile.com to register. And hey, if you're not familiar with The Spark File, first of all, welcome to the podcast. Secondly, we work with hundreds of creatives of all different kinds who are ready to take their next big step. We help folks fear less and create more in a community that is so fun and vibrant. And if you have joined us before, know that we are going deep with the Brave Creative. So buckle up, Buttercup. It is going to be an awesome adventure. Go to thesparkfile.com to register, but do it soon because it all starts May 13th. Thesparkfile.com. Register now.